I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at cargurus.com. Go to cargurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's cargurus.com. Cargurus.com.
Hello, hello, hello. How are you doing? I hope that you're doing very, very well. You're listening to Kevin Durgin, all clad in lycra, here on UK Health Radio. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for joining us here on Acupuncture Point. We've got a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant show lined up for you. We're going to meet... well, just an absolute tour de force. Claudine Matthews, who is, in addition to being a specialist in the field of nutrition, she's also trying to transform the lives of people living with sickle cell condition. And she wants to do this by enabling more people to access advice about their nutrition. She really is a brilliant woman who is working so, so hard. A truly inspirational woman. And we're also going to be playing another marvellous round of Game of Themes. And if you would like to join in the tremendous fun, all you need to do is to see if you are able to connect the dots and to guess the common theme that links together all of the glorious music that I'm going to be playing for you across today's Acupuncture Point.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Hello there. You're listening to Kevin Durgin here on UK Health Radio. We are your global feel-good station. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for supporting Acupuncture Point this week. I love meeting people who are passionate about what they do. And a few weeks ago, I met up with a lovely colleague called Suzanne Ruggles. And she runs a charity called Full Circle, which is based at St. George's Hospital in South London. And she said to me, "Kevin, you have got to meet Claudine. You've got to meet her." I did. I met her at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and she was just inspirational. So here we are. I'm very, very pleased to be meeting with the inspirational Claudine Matthews, who is, frankly, a fascinating woman, absolutely fascinating woman, a registered dietitian and a nutrition consultant in the field of sickle cell disease. And Claudine is blazing a trail, and she is trying her very best to get nutritional advice integrated into the standard care for people living with sickle cell disease. I'm so thrilled to have you here on Acupuncture Point. Thank you so much, Claudine Matthews.
Thank you, Kevin, for this amazing opportunity and for this wonderful introduction. I am really excited to share some of the passion that I have for the area of nutrition in sickle, and hopefully the listeners will benefit from the conversation that will transpire over the next couple of minutes.
Brilliant, brilliant. Okay, so most people listening to this will go, I've heard of sickle cell, you know, it's been on TV. I might have, you know, paid a little bit of attention. What is sickle cell disease and why is sickle cell a disease? And what are some of the symptoms of having this condition?
Thank you. Great question. And I think a really good starting point, because without knowing what sickle cell is, it's very difficult to actually have an understanding of why I particularly am interested in getting nutrition integrated. But so what is sickle cell disease? It's essentially a genetic condition. The consequences of sickle cell disease is really devastating to the people that, you know, end up having the condition. But essentially, so as I said, it's a genetic condition, and there's different types. So the main type that you will find when you're reading through the literature is what they call the SS. So these are people that have inherited a sickle gene from mum and dad, and they have the condition called hemoglobin SS, because essentially sickle cell disease affects the hemoglobin gene. And so there's some other types of sickle cell that's less prevalent, and that is sickle cell SC. So the person would have inherited an S, a sickle gene from one parent, and a C, which is another type of abnormal hemoglobin from a parent. And there's another type called the S beta thalassemia, which again, there is the sickle gene, the S hemoglobin gene that's inherited from one parent, and then the beta thalassemia gene that's inherited from another parent. So you can see it is about abnormal hemoglobin. And why is hemoglobin important? Because hemoglobin is actually the oxygen-carrying pigment in the blood. So for us, without sickle cell, you will have a lovely round donut-shaped red blood cell that, you know, that flows through the body really quickly and easily and freely. But when you have sickle cell, when you've got this abnormal hemoglobin gene, you find that it actually changes under certain conditions. And one of the key conditions is low oxygen levels. Mm-hmm. So that nice round donut shaped hemoglobin molecule actually changes to form the sickle shape, which is where the name sickle cell comes from. And so if you have sickle cell, essentially what happens, you've got less of this circulating hemoglobin, normal, healthy hemoglobin, which means you have less oxygen. And we all know without oxygen, we can't survive. And it's the same for our tissues, and it's the same for our cells in the body and the organs in the body. Every single cell of our body needs oxygen. So if you are somebody with sickle cell disease, you will have inherently less hemoglobin, which means you have less oxygen, which means that your tissues, your cells, your organs will have less oxygen around to keep it nice and healthy. And that's where the consequences or the signs and symptoms you asked about of sickle cell comes in. And one of the key, or what they call the clinical features or main problems that sickle cell patients have, is to do with this a term called chronic hemolysis. So that's a big term, but I'm going to describe it to you. It's basically the rapid breakdown of your red blood cells. So you remember you have sickle cell, you have this abnormal gene, but you also have this rapid breakdown of that red blood cell that's in your body. And the consequences of that is that you, like I explained, you have less hemoglobin, you have less oxygen. And so patients with sickle cell will end up feeling chronically, because this is an ongoing process, And usually that breakdown period of normally normal red blood cells will live for about 120 days. But if you have sickle cell, that half-life, or the, you know, the period that it lives in the body, is reduced markedly down to between 12 and 30 days. So you can see, you know, on an ongoing basis or chronically, you can have sickle cell patients living with chronic anemia and fatigue and feel really run down most of the time. But in addition to that, they also have what's known as, again, a big term called oxidative stress. And that's just that there's an imbalance of harmful substances in the body that can actually break down the tissues and the cells in the body. So it's like a double whammy. You've got a little oxygen, and then you've got potentially substances in the body because of that process of chronic hemolysis that can cause damage as well. And so there's this ongoing need for the body to make more red blood cells. And I think, you know, the other main thing that I want to just mention is the fact that sickle cell patients can end up having quite a bit of what's described as painful crisis. And that's called the hallmark feature of sickle cell. So they have these really painful episodes where, you know how I mentioned the sickle shape, you know, when the red blood cell changes shape because of low oxygen levels, they change shape into the sickle shape. And that red blood cell is actually quite hard and stiff and rigid. And so it actually forms plaques in the blood vessels and clots, so to speak, and block the flow of blood and oxygen and nutrients to that particular area where that crisis is happening. And that causes excruciating pain for the patients. And because it's a blood condition, it can affect any part of the body. It can affect the brain. Lots of young children with sickle cell end up having strokes because of that condition. And then you also have younger people needing to have hip replacements and knee replacements. And normally, you know, you expect to have a knee replacement or a hip replacement in someone that's older and frail, but we have this frailty, this condition called avascular necrosis, where, you know, the joints of the hips and the knees and shoulders sometimes as well need to be replaced because it's causing that much debilitation and disability to the people, you know, the sickle cell patients. And then the last one I want to mention, because you would have heard this during the COVID pandemic, is the link between sickle cell disease and an increased risk of infection because of impaired immunity. So the immune function doesn't work as well. And specifically the spleen of many sickle cell patients are affected. And some of them actually have to have what's called a splenectomy or removal of the spleen, which then affects how your body is able to fight, you know, infections and et cetera. And so these are the three key what's called clinical problems or clinical features associated with a condition that really impact on the medical side of sickle cell, but also my area of interest, the nutritional implications of the condition.
Thank you. Gosh, Claudine, that is such a very, very clear explanation of what sickle cell is. Do we know how prevalent sickle cell is around the world?
So I'll start with the UK. So in the UK, we have a growing population that's estimated between 15 to 16,000 sickle cell patients. And then around the world, the United Nations have estimated about, well, this was in 2008, so the numbers could have increased, but about 20 to 25 million people with the different types of sickle cell. And then in West Africa, Nigeria, and also in Jamaica and in the US, they have quite a high prevalence of sickle cell patients as well. But what I will say in this, because that's sometimes the thing that deters people from paying attention to sickle cell, because they think, oh, in comparison to another long-term condition, that's a drop in the ocean. But the care that sickle cell patients need to maintain their levels of health and well-being can be quite expensive. And so the cost burden for managing sickle cell disease, if you compare the low number, it's very comparable to conditions that have a higher prevalence. So in 2011, 10-11, the cost for sickle cell crisis as the main reason for hospital admissions then was just under £19 million. And that was about 3,000, just over 3,000 admissions. So you can see that, you know, it's don't judge the number as being, oh, it's only a drop in the ocean. You know, that one number can have multiple person, can have multiple admissions to the hospital that can actually increase the cost significantly. And so therefore we have to pay attention to sickle and not be bogged down by, oh, it's only 15,000 or, oh, it's only 16,000. Sorry, well, I just wanted to add that in there.
Absolutely. And it is a lifelong condition.
It's a lifelong condition.
Okay. So you are a nutritionist. Why is nutrition important, or rather nutritional advice important for people with this sickle cell disease?
Yeah, thank you. Good question. So I'll just say I'm more of a, and I was thinking about this morning, I would say firstly, a patient advocate with a background of nutrition and obviously my interest in area, because that's really, really important for me, because people need to understand the passion, you know, for me wanting, and it's more than just the nutrition advice, I think. What I'm trying to do through my research is actually looking at nutritional care, which includes the advice, which includes the knowledge and the resources to be freely available to sickle cell patients. But essentially, why is that important? And when I started the interview with explaining to you what are those clinical problems or clinical features associated with sickle cell, that is the reason why. And many people don't know that. And so therefore, at this point in time, at the end of 2022, we still have people, even within sickle cell, who don't actually make the connection of nutrition to sickle cell disease. And that's a really important point that I want to highlight, that the nutritional implications or the nutritional problems of sickle cell patients is directly related to those clinical features that I mentioned to you earlier on. And I mentioned chronic hemolysis, which is the rapid breakdown of red blood cells. And in that, I explained to you about this chronic anemia and fatigue. And if you've ever had anemia, I had anemia and I was really unwell during that period. So imagine you're living with chronic anemia and fatigue. You know, so it's the chronic anemia fatigue. It's the oxidative stress that I said, the harmful substances that is generated in tissues and cells that can cause chronic inflammation. And it's also, you know, just the need for the body to have to make more red blood cells on a very quick time span. Like I said, usually for normal red blood cells, it's 120 days. In sickle, it's between 12 and 30 days. So to do that, our body needs the nutrients to actually help it make those red blood cells. So we need key vitamins. We need key minerals. We need protein, because as the body breaks down its red blood cells, it needs extra protein to help with that synthesis. We know that proteins, the function of protein is repair and synthesis. So we need so much more protein on an ongoing basis, and more so in sickle cell, to help with that synthesis or the making of this new red blood cells. And then also allowing our body to fight off this chronic inflammation that's as a result of this oxidative or this imbalance of harmful substances in the body. And so, you know, even just thinking about the painful crisis that I mentioned. And so this ongoing painful crisis, that blockage of blood flow in the blood vessels can also cause tissue damage. And so over time, many sickle cell patients can end up with their kidneys not working well or their liver not working well. And so through that process as well, although it's sort of down the line, there are key nutritional needs, increased nutritional needs on top of just the normal having to make more red blood cells. And this process of what they call the hemolysis and this rapid breakdown of red blood cells and this low oxygen, the heart then also has to work so much harder to pump that little bit of blood that's around the body. So you have this increased what they call cardiac demand, so demand on the heart to pump, but also this increased demand for energy, because all these processes need more energy and so forth. And so in addition to that, you know, you will have to look at what are they eating? How much are they eating? Are they eating enough, A, to get the heart working optimally, B, to get those new red blood cells being made, C, can the body actually help to reduce and fight this ongoing chronic inflammation? And then the third point I said about the impaired immune function. So they're at constant risk of infection, and particularly in the younger patients, but sort of across the life course, you know. And so how are we helping the sickle cell patients to know about what foods can help regulate, you know, and help improve how well their immune function can work? And so these are just the key sort of factors that are, as I said, directly related to the clinical problems that requires medical management, but that also means that that patient requires nutritional support, advice, guidance, resources, assessment in order for them, for their whole body to work as optimally as it possibly can.
It sounds as if it's very, very intuitively obvious that people with sickle cell disease, obviously, they would need to be receiving advice about their diet. I know that when my parents developed diabetes, one of the first things that happened to them is, well, they were sent to a dietitian and they were given a sheet. They were given advice about these are the things that you need to be eating, and lay off some of those other foods that can result in a spike. And that just happened automatically. It's very interesting to me that it hasn't happened automatically. What have you done over the past few years in your position as a patient advocate? What have you been doing in order to try to create this change and to try to get nutritional advice more integrated into standard care?
Thank you. Great question. So the answer is that the last 8 years, I've dedicated my time and energy and passion to try and what I call change the nutrition landscape in sickle cell. And initially when I started, it was 2014 that I actually discovered, because I didn't know that, even though I was a dietitian and I worked in dietetic service, we didn't know about the link between nutrition and sickle cell. So I stumbled across this link when I was reading an article about acute trauma as an emerging specialty in dietetics. And when I was reading the article, I'm thinking, but when sickle cell patients have a crisis, I mentioned earlier, that painful episode, it is quite a traumatic experience for them when they're having that. And if nutrition can play an important role in acute trauma, you know, then why not sickle cell disease? So that's when I was like, I need to look into this more. I need to find out, because at that point I knew nothing. And so I started looking to the literature to see what there was, because I was like, I don't want to make a fool of myself and say this is something when actually it isn't. And then, you know, I discovered that there's over 60 years worth of research that looks into the role of nutrition in sickle cell. And at that point, because obviously I was so new to the area, but prior to that, I'd been working in the sickle service, so I understood the condition, I understood the clinical features and the impact that had. And I was really keen to look at how can we incorporate nutrition into the wider management of sickle cell patients. And initially I thought, as a dietitian, the first starting point for me would be naturally to inform other dietitians. Because if we've got a body of experts, nutrition and diet experts, then surely we need to get more dietitians to know about the nutritional implications of sickle. And so I started writing the first ever article that was published in our dietetic magazine, Dietetics Today, about nutrition and sickle, to inform other dietitians that this is a thing, this is real, you know, there's evidence for it. And subsequently wrote a number of articles on that, and had this desire then, right in 2015, to develop what I call then a national nutrition strategy, because I believe that if things were going to change for the patients, we almost needed to go look at policy and practice change. So my interest was always, I need to be there in order for us to change things on the ground for the patients. And I was at that point told, Claudine, for what you want to do, you need to do a doctorate. And I'd never before thought of doing a doctorate. I just never thought I would do a doctorate. And I said, yes. I didn't have any money. Went to the bank and said, I need to do this doctorate. Can you please borrow me money? And then that's how I started. So the last, I would say, certainly the last 8 years, but in 2016 is when I embarked on the self-funding doctorate. And, you know, because I'm absolutely, absolutely convinced and fully persuaded that there is enough evidence out there, and in addition to what I've been looking at through my research, that, you know, that supports this call, this need to integrate nutritional care, which includes the advice and resources, et cetera, service provision, into standard care, because that's the gap in the literature. And it's interesting, it's part of my doctoral research, probably you've got to identify the gap. And that was, you know, there's several gaps because obviously it's a new area, but I was really keen on looking at that one gap that was going to enable me to focus on and draw on this whole need for policy and practice change, because I do believe that's where the change needs to be. And so, yes, yeah, so through my research, so the aim essentially of my research project is, like you've been alluding to earlier on, is actually to integrate, to include and to integrate nutrition into standard care provision for sickle cell patients, which is the vision, my passion for all of this work that I'm doing is to actually have every sickle cell patient around the world, in the UK, but around the world, to have access to nutritional care provision as part of standard care. Because what I've heard through my research project with my participants, and I had patients, carers, and providers, what I heard from the carers and the providers is that nutrition isn't part and parcel of their standard care. Yet they do believe it's fundamental. One participant who's a service user actually said, nutrition is fundamental to my mental health, you know? And, you know, and another woman said that, you know, she ended up being diagnosed with something later on, which she felt, you know, could have been prevented if nutrition was part and parcel of a standard care. And so, yeah, so for me, it's about addressing the knowledge gap. It's about addressing the resources gap. And it's about building and putting in place nutrition service provision for sickle cell patients. Before I end, and I'm talking quite a bit, but I just want to mention that there are actually national nutrition standards that I've been invited to write. That's part of a 300-page document, page 75 to 77, that nobody knows about. And the first standard is that dietitians be part of the MDT, the multidisciplinary care provision for sickle cell patients. And so I will keep fighting, but essentially that is the passion. That is what I'm hoping through my research and what I will continue to do post, because I've got 6 months left to finish this doctorate. I'm really excited. It's been a hard journey, but 6 months left, and hopefully work towards the goal, which is that, you know, integrating nutrition into standard care for sickle patients.
We've got a few minutes left. You've used the word "I've been fighting," or used that turn of phrase several times. I find it frankly baffling that you should have to fight in order to have something that is so very intuitively right. And the research demonstrates that it is right, that people benefit when they receive this sort of advice. Why have you had to fight? What have some of the barriers been?
I think one of the key barriers has been the fact that lack of recognition of the link between the nutritional problems and sickle and the pathophysiology. And that comes because although we've got the 60 years worth of research, that translation that would normally happen. So when we do research, the aim of research is to actually use the findings to inform practice to inform policy. And unfortunately, in nutrition in sickle, that hasn't happened. So we've got amazing research, but nothing has happened in terms of translation. And so that is one of the key messages that I'm trying to highlight through my research. And then the other thing is that you don't want to go down the race route, but unfortunately, you know, that is a key part, again, that I highlight through my thesis, because you can't do any work in the area of sickle cell without acknowledging this is a marginalized group and the implications that has. And I don't know if our listeners... our listeners know that there was a document that was published, No One Is Listening, by the All Party Parliamentary Group for Sickle Cell and Thalassemia, which highlights some of the problems that has impacted the level of care and the quality of care that sickle cell patients receive, and that has resulted in deaths of sickle cell patients. And a young boy that actually lives in my borough is one of the people that died as a consequence of that. So race is definitely... a part of that. And then the other thing I think is just I don't actually know what the reasons are, but I think it's down to, I'm going to use the word ignorance, it's quite a strong word, but ignorance is just that you don't know, or you're misinformed, and so that is the challenge that I'm putting out to people through this interview as well, that people wake up, so to speak, and acknowledge sickle cell in the first instance, because nutrition without sickle doesn't work. So nutrition in the sickle in the first instance, that direct link between nutrition and sickle cell, and the impact of the marginalization, you know, of sickle cell, the impact of racism on care, and just the patients itself. You know, I started off with, don't look at the numbers. This is a person. This is a person that has blood flowing, and sometimes it doesn't, but they are just like you, who don't, you know, we all have our things, but it's a person. And that's why for me, I started off with, I'm a patient advocate first, then I'm a dietitian. And so listening to the patient voice, acknowledging the patient in the midst of all of this, I think that's what I'm trying to get across to the health planners, to the policymakers. And what, if I can just say this, so I'm in the process now of getting signatures for people to actually sign a letter that I want to send off to the All Party Parliamentary Group for Sickle Cell and Thalassemia, calling for nutrition to be placed on the agenda for open discussion. And I would really value your listeners' support, your support, anybody's support, to try and drum up as much support, numbers, signatures, so that this can not end up being just a conversation, which it can easily be, but actually an opportunity for action on the ground, and to get the improvement in nutritional care for patients with sickle cell disease.
Wonderful. We've got 1 minute. Claudine, what is your hope for the future?
I said this and I'm going to say it again. My vision, very clear. For every sickle cell patient in the UK and across the globe to have access to nutrition care provision as part of standard care. So when a sickle cell patient goes to their consultant, to their nurse, to the psychologist, whoever they go and see as part of their care, that they will have the liberty, they will have the encouragement to speak and ask and be asked about their nutrition care and what goes on for them, about their appetite, you know, about what are they eating, can they afford to eat, et cetera, et cetera. And that is my hope and that is my vision. And I know it's going to happen on my watch with your help. Thank you.
Well, thank heavens for you, Claudine Matthews. Thank you so much for joining us on Acupuncture Point today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, My savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And on that note, thank you so much to my guest, Claudine Matthews. Thank you so much for all of your hard, hard work. And a very big thank you to you for tuning in to this week's Acupuncture Point. I look forward to seeing you again next week. Lots of love. Goodbye.
Hello, America. It's your new favourite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.